I want to welcome everyone to our Keeping on Track open line. We are celebrating 20 years in business and just entering our seventh year of doing this program. We have a few new exciting changes. First, we have a brand new 2014 open line format that comes with the launching of our new website, which you could browse around at another time. You can also find an archive section of past topics under our publication and event tabs, which go back pretty close to the 7 years. And I'm privileged to say that Paul David Walker has been doing these programs with us as a guest for pretty close to that full time, which we're grateful for. We also have a brand new book, Cracking the Business Code. It's available on Amazon, or you can click on the book icon on our homepage. Lighthouse has really been growing rapidly over the past 36 months, and you can read more about it on our website. Our topic today, which is an extremely hot topic, and that's why we're doing this, is entitled Leadership for Today's Environment. My name is Dana Barocca. I'm the CEO of Lighthouse Consulting Services, and we'll be hosting our program today. We have just a few housekeeping items, and we're going to jump right into our topic. For those of you joining us for the very first time at Lighthouse, everything we do goes back to our mission statement to bring effective insight to your organization. We do this through our in-depth work style and personality assessments to help raise the hiring bar and to assist teams in raising the bar for higher levels of interaction in order to get the best out of everyone within the organization. We also offer a number of workshop topics to associations and trade organizations. If you'd like more information, please email me as indicated on your screen. Our Keeping on Track open line series is in response to a number of calls we constantly get from many of our clients, both domestically and globally, to address the various business issues that most organizations are facing today. Our goal is to make this an interactive program, so on your screen you'll see an area you can send questions or ideas during our discussion, and we'll attempt to respond to as many of you as possible, and we do have a full house today. So please join us with your thoughts and insights you have along the way. At the conclusion of our program, we're going to open up the line so you can talk directly with our guest. What's also interesting is if you could write down 2 to 3 questions, you could either, throughout the program, you could either send during the program or ask during our open line section. You'll also want to have some paper and a pen handy to take notes so you can share the many ideas that are going to be coming out today and you'll want to consider and implement with your team and trusted advisors. Our special guest with us today is not only a good friend and at the top of his game in the world of business is Paul David Walker of Genius Stone Partners. Paul is the author of the best-selling book, Unleashing Genius. If you haven't read it, go get it. It's one of those must-read books, and Paul also has another book coming out later this year. Paul is one of the few CEO coaches who has worked with numerous Fortune 500 CEOs and their key staff members for well over 25 years, along with many mid-cap organizations. Some of the organizations that Paul has worked with include Starkist Foods, New York Life, Anne Klein, Rockwell International, countless manufacturing firms that are not only global, but also domestically based and locally, regionally based too. Paul has also worked with global utilities, service and consulting organizations, and is the founder of Genius Stone. I feel privileged to have Paul with us today and to share ideas that will help each of us in preparing for the future and for dealing with today's business issues. Paul, I want to welcome you. And also, one more thing, registration will begin for our next program at the end of the topic today. And the program will be the topic will be strategic planning. So, Paul, welcome back to Open Line. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you, Dana. Thank you for that wonderful introduction. And, you know, you bring effective insight, you know, to teams. And, of course, when you look insight up in the dictionary, it's seeing into the true nature of things, which is going to be very important going forward. When we look at our first slide here, the future environment. I mean, it's getting more and more aggressive. It's an aggressive global environment. Even though you might be working in the U.S., I have mid-sized clients that are working in the U.S., but their supply chain reaches out to China, to South Asia, to India. And so this aggressive global competition is going to be a factor. And it requires keen insight into what's really going on out there. There are going to be a lot of new rules, if you will. The bottom line on the new rules is they're not going to be a lot of rules. People are going to do whatever they can to gain market share, to compete with you. Competitors for most of my clients are coming in over the transom for all kinds of reasons. And it's pretty fascinating to watch how the rules are changing constantly. And globally, we don't have, you know, a consistent business practice that we can count on. We do in the U.S., which gives us, you know, a strategic advantage, as I said earlier. That these changes in the global dynamics, in the global economy, are going to be happening at light speed. I mean, and they are happening at light speed. So, I mean, you just never know what's next. All the more reason for having a very tight, very focused team who is insightful and knows themselves. I mean, the Temple of Delphi, right? Those of you who are familiar with philosophy, 3,000-4,000-year-old, it says, of course, know thyself. What do they mean, know thyself? And why is that relevant in business? Well, every leader needs to know their own strengths and weaknesses. We all have weaknesses. If you're one of those leaders who, you know, doesn't see their weaknesses, then you're asleep. You have weaknesses. I have weaknesses. We all have weaknesses. We have strengths. And the key for a successful leader is not to rest on the laurels of their strengths, but to expand their strengths and mitigate their weaknesses. Your weaknesses are weaknesses. Yeah, I can work with you and you can get past some of those weaknesses, but really what you need is a mitigation strategy and a team that covers for your weaknesses if you're the leader. First thing to do right now, if you haven't done a lot of work on yourself to understand your own natural strengths and your own weaknesses, get started. Because like anything in life, if you start from a delusional position, the journey is going to be full of problems. And given the speed of global business and the changes in global business, it's going to be really difficult to keep up if you're leading with your weaknesses, if you're ignoring your weaknesses, and if you don't expand your strengths of your team and your strengths. Because a great athlete expands their strengths. A great leader is always working on further expanding their strengths, looking at the team. How do we rearrange this team so everyone's working from their strengths versus people's weaknesses? How do we understand what our weaknesses are so we don't attack with those weaknesses? And the same, of course, is true for your business. Your business has strengths and weaknesses. No business is perfect. And you've got to really work on understanding where you're strong. I was talking to a mid-sized company, and they're wanting to enter the market with some adjacent products to their core product. And as they were examining, and we were helping them examine, well, what products should we enter the market with, clearly there are some products that are synergistic with their existing products, but every one of those products is a large corporation like Honeywell, big air conditioning companies. So it's not wise to compete with somebody who has more capital than you have. So knowing your weaknesses, it's just as important as knowing your strengths. You know what you're good at, and you know where you can't compete. So it's going to be brutal out there if you head off strategically in the wrong direction and spend capital. It's going to be hard to get it, hard to get that back. So know yourself, know your business, know your team strengths and weaknesses. And without that, you're really operating blind. I know people hate that. They hate to sit down and be reflective, but it's better to do it now than after a major failure. Then you'll be looking at your weaknesses, but it might be hard to recover afterwards. Now, once you have that in place and you're ready, this slide's kind of, people have trouble with it. Know when you know, right? What do I mean by know when you know? Well, at some point in time, you do strategic research. I think next month's presentation is going to be valuable. You're going to reflect on your situation. You're going to question all your assumptions that you have, particularly the ones that worked in the past. I mean, that is the black hole of innovation, things that worked in the past. So, well, geez, this worked, either for you personally or as a company. Be careful. The future is changing rapidly. And, you know, they always say the only constant is change. But now it changes at light speed with the Internet, with, you know, global communications. You've got to really reflect, because knowing the answer when it's too late is a disaster for a business. How do you do that? You know, one, you got to collaborate, not only with your team. You know, you might have a team of people who've been in your industry for 20 years. There's a lot of knowledge there. Your marketplace, talk to them. What do they think? What do they feel would be good products for you? How are you doing with them? What could you do to be more effective? Then you'll find the right course. But if you don't know the right answer, you know, I always talk about different clients who knew. I've interviewed about 25 CEOs for my new book now. And one of them was telling me, he's a high-tech CEO who runs a company called Local.com. And he said he was looking at the data, he was looking at the statistics, and he saw he must make a change. I mean, right away. Took him like a week of research to the point where he got, okay, I know we got to change our approach here. I know it. And he did. He changed it. It was a big change. He had to lay people off, had to bring in new people. And he got it done like in 2 weeks. And he saw an increase in his business. His competitors, who didn't see that change coming, went out of business, which he was glad of. But you better have the right answer before you start shooting, right?
Paul, that's pretty amazing what you just shared. And somebody wrote a question in, but how do you know for sure?
How do you know for sure? Well, you do your research, you do all the traditional things, and then it's up to your intuition. You've got to learn to trust your intuition. And, boy, is this your intuition calling, or is this your ego, or is this your fear calling, right? That little voice that goes, okay, this is it. I'm committing all the resources of my company to this direction. You got to learn the difference between the feeling that comes from your ego, you know, I want to be a great company, a great leader, or the feeling that comes from your fear. I better be cautious. I better not do anything new and different. And your natural knowing, it's there. But oftentimes we're blocked. Knowing the difference. Know the difference between signals that come from your ego, your fear, and the intuition that comes to you from your years and years of experience in the business and the research that you're doing. So,
Paul, another question.
Does that make sense?
Somebody said, identifying fear, they don't have a problem with that.
Right.
But they're not quite sure how to identify ego from the knowing part.
That's the tricky one. Yeah. So it takes practice. every time you make a good decision, you need to go back and get in touch with that moment of knowing. Okay, I did this. I launched this product. It was a big success. Somehow I knew it. What did that feel like? And I recommend every significant success you've had, get a journal and write the story of that success and get in touch. When I work with a client, that's one of the first things I do, is what is your code for success? How do you know it's right? There's a difference. Every CEO I've ever talked to said there's a difference in that. The difference between that crazy wild hopes, oh, I'm going to be king of the world. You know, I worked with a sports psychologist years ago who worked with all the professional baseball players and football players, and he did a study for the baseball league on how do we know if someone's going to succeed in the big leagues, you know, pulling them up from the minors. And one of the things that he found is those that were bragging, those that thought they were the greatest thing since sliced bread, had an inflated view. They didn't know themselves, you see. They had an inflated view of themselves, never made it. Those that were kind of humble and said, you know, I'm a good hitter, I'm a good fielder. These are my skills. This is how I'm going to pitch myself. This is what I'm going to focus on expanding. Those are the ones that succeeded. There's a lot of vibrato or hyperbole in their knowing. That things that are typically associated with the ego show up in the way you feel, and that's dangerous. You got to hang on and go, wait a minute. Is this real, or is this me wanting to be king of the world, or whatever? It's just a different feeling. You got to, every time you succeed, get in touch with that feeling, what it was like. Every time you fail, same thing. Then you'll know the difference. It takes practice.
Good no point. Shortcut. Thank you for addressing that.
Yeah, sure. Well, the next slide. Once you know, you've got to paint a compelling picture of that outcome. And if you know the answer to a new product, a new direction, a new strategy, people don't walk into dark rooms. You know, I think if you can go back to when you were a child and you had to go into a dark room looking for a toy or something and couldn't find the light switch, what does your brain fill the room up with? Pots of gold and ponies? No. Your brain fills the room up with monsters, boogeymen. The unknown is a dark room to everybody. And if your team and your market, your customers, can't see the compelling picture of this solution, they're not going to move towards it. They're going to be hesitant. You're going to have a lot of chatter, a lot of equivocating. You know, you've got to light the future with your vision. You've got to make people see and feel the value of this new direction, this new strategy, this new business approach, whatever it is. Once you know, it's not enough for you to know as the leader, the CEO. You've got to make sure your team knows. And you have to translate that to every level in the organization. So everybody is part of the team. Everyone from the janitor to the CFO to the CEO, the executive team, everyone has a role. And you need to translate the benefits of that future picture, that compelling picture, down, you know, to everyone's level. And in a way that they can understand. So there is nothing really more important than being able to build that visceral picture. Even when I work with an individual, I'm working with an individual right now who's known to be, judgmental and confrontive, and people avoid them as a result. Now, they're extremely smart, and they know their business, but they have a way of intimidating people, so people clam up. So I've helped them construct a picture of how to inspire people and make people feel comfortable so that they can collaborate and get their ideas. And I'm literally, they write a description in the first person of how they're going to act differently. And then once we determine that, then I coach them on how to act differently. The same would be true with a new strategy, right? You have a new strategy. It's new. People don't know how to do it. People are nervous about creating the future. There might be danger out there. They might fail. The clearer that picture is, the more certain the people who follow you are going to be, and the more certain you're going to be, and the more the market will be drawn into your game. And that picture has to include not a typical mistake is people paint a picture of the product. This is a great product. It's a wonderful product. This is a high technology price, our latest technology. Hey, customers don't care about that. What is the product of the product? What does this do for me? That's the picture you have to paint out in the market. That's the picture you have to paint even with your people. What is achieving this vision, this mission? How's that benefit me? You have to show certainty. And it has to be clear and concrete. I remember one of my clients who would go unnamed, and their vision statement was, be the best, right? Well, okay, be the best. What does that mean? What does that mean? That doesn't mean anything, right? What we found that it meant is they wanted to charge 0.5% premium for their financial products. If they were the best, I always say, well, how am I going to know you're the best? And how we knew that is they could charge 0.5% premium for their financial products. So that was the goal of our strategic work, the goal of our leadership work is to be able to charge an extra 0.5%, and they succeeded. Now, that was a meaningful picture of the future. If that occurred, everybody could see, wow, that's important, that's valuable. So,
Paul, a couple of questions came in. One of them summarizes pretty well. And I know that you not only coach CEOs, but also senior-level folks. So the question overall here is, if you're not a CEO but want to cultivate the vision in yourself and at your level of responsibility, how do you do that? And we actually had like 3 or 4 of those type of questions come in, but that one summarizes it pretty well.
It's a great question. Well, a leader is a leader, you know, whether you're the CEO or you're head of operations or you're running a department. All those principles apply. It's just a little different context. If you're the CEO, you're looking at the whole enterprise and you have more resources available to you. And so you're looking at the overall strategic direction of the enterprise. But then each person in the enterprise has their role, and each leader of different departments then has to carry that vision down to the level of the people who are following them. Typical example was we were working with a big insurance company, and you know, the steps to success in the sales group or the culture needed in the sales group was certainly different than the culture needed in the actuarial group. You know, to say, oh, well, let's just have this one wonderful culture, it's kind of silly, you know. Nice to have some core values, but every group, the actuarials would translate getting, let's say, a premium on those products in a way that was meaningful and compelling to the actuarials. The head of sales would translate it in a way that was meaningful to the sales team, to the people leading sales, and to the customers in the marketplace. So these principles apply to everything that has to do with inventing the future. Even your own personal future. You know, what is the answer? Where am I strong? Where am I weak? How will my career succeed? How do I make it better? How do I grow? It's the same thing. You know, once you know the answer, once you're committed to a direction, then you've got to paint that compelling picture for yourself. It is a personal vision. You've got to be inspired to do the hard work to change and get there. Same for your department. If you've got a department of three, you know, you want those three people to really be really clear what's important going forward and how to do it. Does that make sense?
Yeah, that's really well put. Somebody said once that regardless of whatever position anyone's at, if they're running a household or a department, everyone's a CEO of their own life.
That's exactly right. Just the higher up you go and the bigger the corporation, the more variables and more complicated it is.
Boaz said that. Boaz is an outstanding motivational speaker for companies, and we're all the CEO of our own lives.
That's right. That's right. It's funny, Boaz was also one of the famous British anthropologists who is the touchstone for anthropology, interestingly enough.
Huh.
All right, so now you have a compelling picture. Now what? Okay, we're not done. No way. You got to build commitment. We are all creatures of habit. If it's a personal thing, you know, let's say you commit to, I just use the example of listening for understanding using Covey's little phrase. Well, you know, if you've never listened for understanding, the first time you try and it doesn't work, what are you going to do? You're going to go back to your old habit, right? If you're trying a new product launch, a new strategic direction, the first time it doesn't work, and it probably won't work the first time. Maybe it will, right? Maybe it won't. But new behaviors, new approaches are hard. You've got to break the cycle of habit. We all kind of hide in our comfort zones, right? So I remember years ago, I decided that I was not going to work with a certain segment, you know, in business. That was it. I'm not going to work with them. But I had to sort of persuade myself that I'd still have a practice if I didn't work with them, right? I had to have a clear picture to that outcome, to the benefits of that outcome, and that helped me get more and more committed. And every time you step out of your comfort zone, your company steps out of their comfort zone, whatever. The default setting is going back to your old habits. The default setting has to be reflecting, has to be knowing the answer is right, having that compelling picture, and going back to how do I do it? If you're a leader, you need to draw people out. You need to collaborate. You need to ask them, what are their thoughts? And as you see them going back into their old habits, you need to stop them and draw them into, you know, something, into the vision, into what you're trying to accomplish.
Paul, an interesting question just came in on that particular topic. Any thoughts or techniques for drawing people out? Because that's a really big topic.
Yeah, yeah, several.
Indeed.
Well, one of the, if you read the book about Steve Jobs, you know, he tended to be very aggressive. But the underlying principle that he used was that people can exceed their own expectations. Okay? We all can, but we're all stuck in our comfort zone. We know we can do what we're comfortable doing, but do we know that we can exceed our own expectations? Most people don't. So a good leader has different ways of making people feel comfortable that, yeah, you know, you can do this. Look at this picture. See how this worked. You can do this. I know you can do this. Now, Steve tended to be a little more negative about how he did that. But the underlying principle was, I know people can exceed their own expectations. I know that. And then you draw them out. And once they exceed their expectations, right, once they go beyond their and demonstrate their commitment, catch them doing something not right. You know, remember the old phrase, catch them doing something right. Well, catch them doing something approximately right. Because the chances are they're not going to get it exactly right first time. As they get it approximately right, if you reinforce that that part of it is right, that's moving towards our mission, that's moving towards our commitment, good job, we can do even better. That's how you draw people out. I wouldn't recommend beating people up like Steve. Not all of us are running the greatest and most desirable company in the world. Not all of us have 100 people waiting to replace us. So some of these premier companies like Apple and GE and so on, there's 100 people waiting for every major position. Many of us run companies that's not the case. So we have to inspire people. We have to draw them out. We have to show confidence. Say, you can do this. I know you can do this. And also insist that they do it. Set their goals up that will reflect. You know, we just worked with came into a company and the VP of sales was like, you know, getting their bonus based on the shipments. And what I found out is about a third to 40% of the shipments each month were pulled forward like 2 to 3 months in advance. And he's backfilling. And we say, it's called disrupts manufacturing dramatically. But, of course, we had to hit every month. So he was being evaluated on the wrong thing. He was being evaluated on shipments, and we shifted how we evaluated him to, obviously, bookings and consistent bookings, month to month, quarter to quarter. Once we made that shift, it was like, oh, geez, you know, I got a plethora of excuses and reasons why not, and blah, blah, blah. But we just kept coming at him. You know, you can do this. Come on, let's work a system. Let's get something going. Let's look for leads, because we need you to do that, because we don't have time or the extra capital to be pulling stuff forward, calling customers, asking if we can deliver it early, looking for things we can deliver early, calling vendors and trying to get parts in. It just sucks up energy. Encourage people. They can do a lot better than they think they can. That's how you build commitment. Once they exceed their expectations, give them a big pat on the back and say, hey, good job. Let's keep it up. And block their retreat into their comfort zone every chance you get. So now you got people committed. You got a clear picture of the outcome. You know it's right. You know yourself. You know your team's strengths and weaknesses. You think you'd be done. But no, you're not done yet. Because now you have to respond to present reality. I mean, you never know what's going to happen. Change is constant. Boy, that's a cliche, but yeah, it is. It's constant and it's fast. I mean, I don't know about you guys, but if I'm not renewing my consulting practice every year, if I'm not changing my approach to fit the changing demographics, the changing, you know, we've got millennials now, we got Xers getting into positions of control. We got leaders trying to lead companies of millennials and Xers. There's a different approach. If I were doing the same things I was doing 5 years ago today, I wouldn't have the kind of business that I do have. You've got to respond to present. Well, what are you looking at in the present? That's always the question. Okay, respond to the present. So what? I know that. Well, it's not responding to the present after it's knocked you off, after it's caused damage. It's keeping your eye on emergence. Everything in a marketplace, everything in life is a chain of cause and effects. And there's a momentum. There's a momentum in every market, in every industry, in every company, on every team, in every life, there's a momentum. And that momentum moves forward with or without your conscious participation. So what are you looking for? You're looking for emergence. like the CEO of local.com, he could see some trends emerging before they were really concrete. He could see it. He could feel it. He could sense an emergence. So responding to the present, while you're driving your vision, you're driving your mission, you're driving your new strategy, sure, right? But you got to keep your eye on the present. You don't know what's going to happen. And I say respond versus react. Yeah. Reacting doesn't tend to work. People tend to react after a big problem. Responding is noticing emergence, noticing the trends, and going, we have got to respond to this right now. We've got to adjust that picture of the future. We've got to adjust the way we approach our commitments versus reacting, which is often too late. Right? So respond versus react.
Paul, actually, somebody has wrote an interesting, very insightful comment that it's so important to listen in order to deal with present reality. In their quick example,
oh, yeah.
To listen to customer service or listen to the frontline people and internal people so adjustments can be made. So what? Another question just came in. Could you talk a little more about the difference between responding versus reacting?
All right. Well, I mean, if you're not listening and you're just doing your thing, given the flow of cause and effect is changing constantly, you're just going to have one problem after another, either personally, if you're not listening to your spouse and understanding their thinking, everything you say is going to be out of sync with reality. If you're not listening to the customers, if your customer-facing people are not listening and feeding back things they hear and trends, there's no way for you to respond accurately, you know, to the changing trends. So, yeah, absolutely. I mean, you've got to keep your eye on the ball. You know, if you're a professional baseball hitter and, you know, you're kind of, you know, the pitcher throws a curve, a slider, and then a fastball, that's his normal pattern. Well, if you go based on that pattern, that's not listening. A good hitter will tell you that watching the ball as it approaches, and then they respond to what's happening as the ball approaches them. Even though it's approaching at 95 miles an hour, a professional hitter can see that ball curve, see it slide, whatever. Responding is a reflective process that looks at emerging trends. Reacting is, you know, kind of closing the door after the cattle have left the barn. Reacting is going back to your comfort zone and reacting the way you've always reacted in the past instead of responding to the new dynamics of your business. Make sense?
Yep. One more question came before we go to the next slide, which is our last slide. Given the speed of change, how do you determine what are the most important things to respond to versus ending up reacting to important and not so important change?
Well, one, you have got to be close to your customers, close to your market. Close to whatever the dynamic is for you. If you're a middle manager, you got to be close to what the senior managers are doing, what they're asking you to do, what's important. And it's got to be not something you do once a quarter, not something you do once a month. It's got to be something you do every day. One of my favorite CEOs, I'll share his name, so I'm going to give a positive comment. Dwight Decker was the CEO of Connection Systems. I worked with him for couple of years. He had every trade magazine in his industry. He read them all, looking for trends. You can't just run your business. You've got to be close to the market, close to the trends. You got to be listening, reflecting all the time, and including your team in that. You know, I've noticed blah, blah, blah. What do you guys think? Is this a trend? Is this an aberration? is no longer appropriate or successful to pick a course and just drive down that road. You've got to pick a course, you've got to drive down the road, but you've got to be watching. Competitors are trying to knock you off. And they're coming from everywhere now. It used to be, you know, back in the 90s, it was, we were the big dog and we did it all, but not anymore. You know, I have clients that products are appearing from China, from Russia, lower priced products. You know, just got to keep your eye on the ball. Must. Every day. Every day. You want to be the oracle of your business, you know, not someone else. Don't, you know, I'm an author, so yeah, read my book, but you'll find my book is very universal. It's not about what's happening, what was happening 2 years ago when I published it. It's about these kinds of principles. Because what's happening 2 years ago doesn't count anymore. And because it's different. So that it's a continuous engagement with the market, with the trends, with the flow of cause and effect in your business. And in order to do that, you know, inner stillness. People say, oh, what is this inner stillness now? Are you doing martial arts or what? Right? Well, a leader, all of our heads are full of thoughts and concerns and fears and crazy, wild hopes. You know, there's a lot of chatter in our heads. And we have to be able to put that aside to see what's actually happening. It's like if you look at like stillness in the storm, I say, what is the most powerful storm on earth? It's either a hurricane or a tornado. You could debate the two. I'm not a weatherman. But two things. The center of a hurricane, the most powerful hurricanes, the center is dead still. And when that center starts to break up, the power of the hurricane breaks up. The wind slows down. You don't have that powerful force. That's number one. So it's so true in human activity. A leader that's overthinking things that isn't clear. You know, the professional hitter who's not watching the ball, who's thinking about something else. You're going to miss the ball. You're going to miss opportunity. So that's one. Two, in terms of going back to that previous slide, responding to the present, even a hurricane, you have the prevailing winds, which might blow a hurricane into a mountain range and break up the center, which might blow it out to sea. So while the center holds strong, it's powerful, but the trends of weather can move the hurricane and destroy it. And so it's true for your business. You've got a powerful thing going on. You're really clear. You've eliminated sort of cultural chatter. Right? So for a person, it's your internal chatter that's clouding your view of what's actually happening out there. Right? The same for a culture. Right? So if you've got a lot of gossip, a lot of doubt, a lot of uncertainty, a lot of you know, lack of accountability where people are pointing fingers at each other, pointing fingers at the marketplace, pointing fingers at the customers, that, there's a laugh. Well, you know, customers don't get it. They don't get it. Jeez, come on. Guess whose job it is to have them get it? Not theirs, yours. So that internal chatter is can be a real problem. And you want to really be focused and act with certainty.
Hey, Paul, act with certainty. An interesting question just came in. How does a leader or a department head show the effect of cultural chatter to the bottom line? In other words, to show individuals how it's affecting the business itself.
Yeah. Well, one thing that I'll do if I'm facilitating an executive staff meeting is the first two or three times I go in there, I'm not doing any consulting. I'm just watching. I'm participating. And I will tell you that at least 50% of the time in that executive meeting, and sometimes it's a lot more than 50%, I'm being generous here, is spent blaming someone, either each other, the CEO, the board of directors, the stock market, the investors. Things aren't working, and people are being blamed. Now, when somebody blames you for something, what do? You go, oh, yeah, that's my fault. I screwed up. No. You throw a blame back at them. Well, oh, it's not my fault. It's, you know, your department, sales department. Remember, I had an engineer who invented a chip that had 12 features. Semiconductor. Just brilliant. And he was coming into the CEO and I saying, hey, you know, we got this great chip and the salespeople are not selling it. You got to talk to them, kick their butt, and get them to sell this chip. Oh, gee whiz. The marketplace, the cost of that chip to produce was $2.50. The marketplace was willing to pay 90 cents. And they only wanted three of those 12 features. And I don't know how many times, how long we spent, too long, arguing with the head of that particular general manager of that division and his engineers to design products that meet market needs instead of designing products that go on your resume and show that you're a genius. That just sucks up time and energy when people are blaming each other, when people are not being accountable. That chatter, they're worried, they're concerned. It just takes up time. And it clouds the picture going forward. It creates doubt. It creates a lack of certainty. And he who hesitates in this global world will be lost. Somebody is going to come in there and take you to the woodshed. You got to have your team focused on the present. You got to build commitment. You got to paint compelling pictures so that commitment stays. And you got to know the right answer, and you got to know yourself, your team, and your business. So that's the key to the future, and it's got to be faster than ever. So part of that is, you know, having systems set up that carry a lot of the data and bring you a clean picture of what's actually happening out there in the world and in the marketplace.
Boy, that's beautiful, because the stillness is like a pond. You're able to reflect then and really see what's going on around you. Wow, Paul. In just a couple minutes, we're going to conclude this part of the program. I'm going to turn the recording feature off and open up the line so everyone that has a question can talk directly with Paul. We're going to go to our last slide, and you'll see on the screen an area that you can sign up for our next upcoming program on August 21st. It's entitled Strategic Planning for the Rest of Us. it's a huge topic. So please sign up today.
It's important to get the right answer when you do this.
Yeah, very much so. Take this information, and as you're listening to the next program, they go hand in hand. So sign up today. Reserve a space for yourself. Let us know if you'd like your staff or other colleagues to attend. In the next few days, you're going to receive a recording and PowerPoint for today's program. Please feel free to share it. If you want to have discussion groups on this topic and you want to talk with Paul further about it, please give Paul a call. His information is on the site there and will be sent out to you also. Paul, I want to thank you so much for your time today. It's been a privilege to have you as part of Open Line once again. Again, if you want to have any discussions with Paul for your specifics about your industry, your team, time, please feel free to call Paul. His contact information is on the screen. Let me turn off the recording feature, and then we're going to open up the line for questions. Again, I want to thank each of you for attending the Keeping on Track Open Line program. Just a delight to have you over the years, and we'll continue providing outstanding programs. Here we go. Let me turn this off.